The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, all I want is party doll. Come along with me when I'm feeling wild. To be ever loving, true and fair. To run her fingers through my hair. Come along and be my
welcome to the Savage Nation. We're playing music that would be banned by the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. All month we're featuring music, good American music, banned by the throat-cutting throwback troglodytes, loved by the radical left on MSNBC. And so we open with Party Doll by Someone I Forgot. It's August. It's August. Lighten up. Things are getting better. The human gefilte fish, Robert Gibbs, who was the spokesmouth for Obama. Actually, I spelled his name backwards just now, and it spells Amabo. I may start calling him President Amabo for a while, because it seems that everything he does is backwards. Of course, you heard it first in the Savage Nation. No, really, if you turn Obama around, it's Amabo. And everything the man does is backwards. Everything he recommends is upside down. Each plan he has works the opposite way. He goes on a Hate America tour around the world to make the world love America more. Instead, they spit on us more. He pumps trillions of dollars into the economy to turn us around, and he creates greater unemployment and greater dissatisfaction across the land. So we're going to call him President Amabo. 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 So anyway, there's good news out there. Robert Gibbs, his spokesmouth, says that left-wing critics of Obama ought to be drug tested. I agree with him. He's right. They're all stoners. White House press secretary and honorary gefilte fish, Robert Gibbs, says Obama's critics on the left are crazy. He finally made sense. Even he's trying. I mean, he's even having a Freudian slip kind of day. In an interview with the Hill newspaper in Washington, D.C., Gibbs revealed frustration on tax and the administration from liberal Democrats and others in terms likely to make relations even worse. Here's what Gibbs said. He says, quote, I hear these people saying he's like George Bush. Those people ought to be drug tested, Gibbs said. I mean, it's crazy. The press secretary dismissed the professional left in terms very similar to those used by their opponents on the ideological right, saying, quote, they will be satisfied when we have Canadian health care and we've eliminated the Pentagon. That's not reality. Gibbs, there's hope for you yet. You can have a job with me after you get thrown out of the White House. I'll hire you any way you want. I could see the real Robert Gibbs is coming out. He's finally caught on to the fact that those on the left are red diaper dopa babies. The liberal dogs are finally being exposed by Amabo's spokesmouth. Unbelievable to me. So yesterday after the show, I hadn't had a drink in 3 days. It's not that I drink a lot. I drink, all right, I admit it. You know, every day we'll sometimes have a drink or two. But I hadn't had a drink for a few days. I wasn't in the mood. I go for a walk after the show in San Francisco because the weather was just gorgeous, cool, your little sun came out. I walk down on the Embarcadero. It's full of the tourists I love to see shivering in the cold. I'm wearing the overcoat, the scarf, the hat. I'm enjoying walking around down there. I meet up with a friend of mine, and I decide to go over to a place I hadn't been to for years. An old friend of mine, Al Falke, owns the waterfront. And it's been there for a long time. I go over, and I said, no, I'm not drinking. I'll have a vodka martini, though. You know, I'll tell you why I had a drink, and I'm going to show you where I'm leading with this. It's very important. The important part is this. I've been looking up at the sky lately, and I didn't understand why my eyes are turning towards the heavens and mountaintops. And I'm getting this, like, wistful feeling of almost a third-person voice in my head saying he looked up at the sky as though for the last time. In other words, I'm kind of writing a novel about myself, even though I'm not. You get it? I told you I'm starting a new novel. And I read last week for you on Friday one of my early fiction pieces from 1978, because I've been at it a very, very long time. Anyway, the point I'm making is I'm looking at the sky a lot, and I'm getting spooked. It's the mortality thing, you get it? It's the mortality thing. I'm starting to feel that. And I've been able to push it away. You know, the whole story, right? Doc, you know, the whole deal. So I said, okay, I'm in the bar and I'm in the waterfront. I'm having a good time. And Al's there and a friend of mine is there, as I said. And there's a nice guy, a veterinarian who works at a medical school, in the medical school itself. And he tells us a joke. And here's what he said to me. It's so beautiful. He says, when Reagan was president, we had great artists like Bob Hope and we had great singers like Johnny Cash. Now that we have Obama as president, we have no hope and no cash. Incredibly funny. At least it was to me after the first martini. Now, after the second martini, I had him repeat it. Actually, it was funnier. After the third martini, I was feeling no pain, and I felt as though I had wings and I was immortal. Needless to say, it was not true. It was a temporary reprieve from the vicissitudes of existence. Whereupon, we grabbed a ride and headed down the wharf to a fisherman's wharf to my good friend Richie Aliotto's Aliotto's restaurant. Unbelievable. What a meal. I'm not plugging him because I want anything. I love these places. And I'm trying to show you that there's a life out there outside of Obama and the Beltway. And although I live in the Heath out here in San Francisco in the provinces, and the show is heard across America, and all this city is crime-ridden, drug-ridden, run by liberal psychos who are all on drugs, bullets are flying in the streets of the theater district killing tourists, and the whacked-out mayor is saying this doesn't happen too often, the bullets are flying. The police are not doing their job because they're afraid to do their job. If the police do their job, they get arrested by the left-wing drug addicts who call them fascists and everything under the sun. So I don't blame the police for hiding. I would do the same thing if I were them. If they stop the bullet before it's shot, they're called racist. If they stop the bullet, if they catch the guy after they shot the bullet, they're called racist. And if they go to court and testify against the guy who shot the bullet, they're called racist. And that's why this city is unmanageable, just as America has become unmanageable. And that's why the JetBlue Airways flight attendant who cursed the passengers and opened up the escape chute, threw his luggage down the escape chute on the tarmac and then skidded down and raced home to his boyfriend in Syosset, is now claiming that it's not his fault. He said it's a result of the rude passenger. Now, that's something I would expect from the left-wing drug addicts in San Francisco. I wouldn't expect it from a flight attendant. The show has been open, ladies and gentlemen. We've been open for business for 3-4 minutes now. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. I've thrown everything but the kitchen sink at you, and no calls, not a call. No one's here. Everyone I know is traveling. Unbelievable to me. Why are you? No one's listening to the show. Okay, let's have a little more rock and roll. Let's see. Guys, where's the new list? You sent me a new rock and roll list. I threw it out already. Here it is, new rock and roll. I'm going to pick one now. Oh, these are not my favorite. Hold it. What do you mean, the Ponytails, Born Too Late? I've had it, the Bell Notes, Smoky Places, the Court. These are not like Sea Cruise, Frankie Ford, Take Me on a Sea Cruise. I want to hear Sea Cruise. That's what I want to hear.
Old man rhythm is in my shoes. It's no use of sitting and singing the blues. So be my guest, you've got nothing to lose. Won't you let me take you on a sea cruise? Ooh-wee,
Oh, no, stop it. Stop that music. I'm actually thinking of booking a sea cruise for the end of August at the Hotel Savage. I'm actually thinking of going away finally. I'm not going to tell you the ship, but I found one that has no smoking on it, except in a smoking section, and it won't affect me because I'll be elsewhere. I finally found a ship that has no Broadway shows, no smoking, no idiots walking around in tuxedos. It's a high-end cruise ship for older people. You know what I'm saying? You can eat in your room and not see anybody for 2 weeks. I may do it. You'll have to do without me. Here's the one I really want to hear on the Savage. There's a moon out tonight by the Capriz. This is really one of my favorite. Oh, wait a minute. Stop. No. Wait a minute. I Ran All the Way Home. Absolutely one of my world's favorites. The Impalas, I Ran All the Way Home. I love this song. I want to hear it. Come on. Come on, guys. Hit the button. Quick on the uptake. They're not. You guys are so fast, you can go to work for Obama. What are you doing? It's not a government job. You have to work for a living here. This song is dedicated to the JetBlue flight attendant who was trying to get home to his boyfriend and couldn't wait. And so he cursed the passengers out and opened the slide and slid down in order to get home as fast as possible. Allegedly. 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 He allegedly did that. Now, here's a story for all of you left-wing drug addicts who work on the left wing. Mexico ex-president Fox calls for drug legalization. You know something? There's an argument to be made for this. And what's interesting is about Vicente Fox is that he's a super intelligent man. I know he's in favor of illegal immigration, which I am not. But the man made an interesting statement in an interview with television that said that what is happening is that this huge market of the United States in drug consumption, the largest in the world, is generating the weapons that are sold to Mexican cartels and is generating the money that is laundered in the United States and brought to Mexico. So he says, although he opposes legalization of drugs on a personal level because it's a health risk, and he's right. He said he was personally opposed to the idea because it represented a health risk to society. Agree, check. He said legalization methods have worked in other countries which use new taxes on the products to finance addiction recovery programs, Fox said. In 2009, Mexico decriminalized possession of small amounts of drugs, including marijuana, cocaine, and heroin. Former Mexican president is saying drug legalization. You know, there's a difference between legalizing drugs and decriminalizing drugs. I don't know if you know the two differences here. But Vicente Fox said that we should decriminalize or legalize drugs to curtail funding to organized crime groups who are using profits from the drug trade to consolidate power. He wrote it yesterday. I think he's a very brave man, incidentally. You know, years ago, there was a book written about prohibition. I forget. I think it was called, I don't remember. The writer has since gone. He was a fabulous writer. I wish to God I could recall it, but I can't do the recall. No, can't remember it. I used to quote it for years before I went into radio. Joseph Conan? Anyway, I don't remember his name, but he wrote a fictionalized account of a secret meeting of some of the richest men in America who had decided to pass legislation to criminalize alcohol consumption and to bring about prohibition because they became the smugglers of alcohol back when that prohibition was put in. And his fictionalized account just struck me as too real to have been pure fiction. I believe that this man, Mr. Fox, rather, has something. And I'd like to discuss that for a moment on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. Should drugs be legalized or be decriminalized or legalized? And that's number one. Yes or no? Now, I want to repeat again. I have staunchly opposed this for years. But when I see 28,000 people dead in Mexico, when I see the corruption of police spilling across the border, when I see a federal government that will do nothing to stop the flow of drugs and other contraband and illegal aliens who are acting as mules in many cases, then I say it may be time to decriminalize drugs to take the profit out of it. And then think, all of the people in the media will finally be able to live without paranoia because they will be using their drugs without fear. And girls like Contessa Brewer on MSNBC, who obviously does not use drugs, she is so intelligent that she actually asked today if the Taliban killed the Christian aid workers who were there to help the ingrates in Afghanistan, if they killed them because they were really trying to convert the Afghans to Christianity. This clueless, dumb broad has to get the prize today for the stupidest woman in the history of the media. The only thing going for her is that she's so innocently stupid you can't hate her. Unlike some of the adults on MSNBC, some of whom are really hateful, this one is just stupid. I'll be back.
Savage.
Where are you, little star?
The Savage Nation. It's Rock and Roll Tuesday on the Savage Nation because it's August and I can. This song is dedicated to Robert Gibbs, the human gefilte fish, for finally, what was he on, sodium pentothal? He spoke the truth? Gibbs must have, the broth in the jar must have had some pentothal in it. He says the critics of Obama ought to be drug tested, the left-wingers. I think he's like the flight attendant, him, and Gibbs finally snapped from the lies that he's been telling. He couldn't take it anymore. He's my new hero today. He's absolutely right. They all are. They're all druggies. Most of them are very wealthy, and they want to tax the rich. Now, explain that to me. Explain to me why the rich want to tax the rich. Can you explain that one to me? Because they have escape clauses in the tax the rich plans that they have, where only you and the middle class will get hit, not them. Now play Over the Mountain Across the Sea by Johnny and Joe. I love that one. Sounds like an Italian restaurant I should open. Johnny and Joe's Meatball Parlor. Oh, come on. Come on. Bump and grind, man. Come on, this is great stuff. Boys and girls don't hold each other anymore while dancing. Their hands are like, don't even touch. They text during a dance. They're busy. They're on the blackberries, the future berries, the past berries, the transcendental berries that take you to another time and space. How come that most of these devices are used for porn? I don't understand. All these advancements in technology basically come down to being used for pornography. That's the horrible thing about technology. They can be used to save lives. 90% of it's used for self-porn, according to what I read. Make it louder. I can't hear it. I feel like I'm going deaf and blind. Come on, give me some music. I got to get off the ground. This is dedicated to President Amabo in the White House. All right, you got the message. I'm in a good mood. You know, a couple of cups of coffee and an Alka-Seltzer, and boom, here I am again. What a stuff. That substance is a winner, that Alka-Seltzer. Remember when they used to have that, like, fizzy guy, that little midget? Like a cartoon in the 60s when they first came out with it? That was I never, like, used it. It really works. I like the original of everything. It's like original aspirin. I don't need added ingredients. It's like Alka-Seltzer. Don't give me the flavor. It's nauseating, all of that stuff. Should we legalize drugs?
Oh, what a relief it is.
Oh, come on, guys. They don't pay for ads. Should drugs be legalized, decriminalized, or not? Because the jails are full of drug users, as you well know. It's corrupting the nation, as you well know. It is attempting to corrupt the police. As you well know, this would be the end of America if we became like Mexico. And therefore, something has to be done here, because the war on drugs is not working. And what about legalizing drugs or something to that? I mean, President Fox said so. What do you think? Yes or no? And why? It's the Savage Nation. Be here.
Savage.
I ran all the way. Oh, wow, wow.
It is the Savage Nation. Sometime in August, in the year 2010, in the year of our Lord, 2010. That's just to make the drug addicts on the left go crazy. In the year of our Lord, 2010. Anno Domini. Maybe they should change it to Anno Obama. A-O instead of A-D. President Amabo. Mexico ex-president Fox calls for drug legalization. He's turning gray. Happens to them all, they turn gray rapidly. It's no joke anymore. He thought he would just, charm everybody and get what he wanted. What the heck? It's just like being in college, you know what I mean? In other words, he thought all of America were like students in a class in a Chicago law school. And that whatever he said would be the gospel, and he holds the grades, and therefore they do what he wants. Then he hits the reality. And all of a sudden, they don't love him anymore. The only people like him are in Saudi Arabia and China. And maybe a few in Syria here and there. But basically, he's lost the American people. See, the guy turns gray. There's nothing worse than being rejected, I got to tell you. I say it from personal experience. I know it from childhood. I was a child who had a struggle ever since I've been a kid. I learned young to overcome rejection. And I've lived with it all of my life. So therefore, I understand what rejection is. But there are people, by the way, who have had the skids greased for them from the time they were born. And I frankly believe our president is one of them. I think he's had a silken road. The skids were greased. And I believe that he's never encountered what he has encountered as a president. I'm being very serious now. And I think it's wearing the man out. I've never seen a man age as rapidly in the White House. There was one other president who aged quite rapidly. Bush actually turned gray the first first? Bush, too, turned a little gray after year two when he realized that his father could. And even Clinton turned gray from all of the girls in the pantry. He never had it so good. You know, pleasure can also wear you out. There's an Italian phrase, and I can't say it on the radio, but Can I say it? Because it's not dirty, actually, when you think about it. I know you guys want to put the censor button on. Old Italian guy's grandfather said it to us when we were kids. He said, too much pusher, no good. That's not dirty. So in other words, too little, too much of anything, you know, the golden mean. That's why we're talking about drugs today. America is in a nightmare tailspin right now with drugs. Drug interdiction isn't working. Drug arrests aren't working. The jails are overflowing. You know rehab is a lie. It doesn't work. You know it and I know it. Stop it. All the money is going, it may as well smoke it for what rehab does. Yeah, I'm cured. Right, great. Give me the stamp so I go back and then you do it again. All right, yeah. Oh, yeah, because my mother hung up her zero with a bathtub. That's why I started using marijuana. That led to cocaine and heroin. That's why I became the biggest dealer in South Brooklyn. All because my grandmother hung her stockings over the bathtub. That's what, all right, next case, next. What was your problem? My problem was is that the prosciutto that my father had reminded me of a ham in Brooklyn, and I don't know what it is. It triggered something in my head. The next thing I knew, I was smoking marijuana to get the ham out of my head because I couldn't take the imagery anymore. I thought I would kill a ham if I didn't smoke marijuana to calm me down. The next thing I know is the biggest drug dealer in North Brooklyn. All right, next, you're cured. We know that it doesn't work. So, should we legalize or decriminalize drugs, as Vicente Fox says? Mexico ex-president Vicente Fox calls for drug legalization. Now, the line in here that struck me, by the way, when he said he was personally opposed to the idea because it represented a health risk to society. But the problem with drugs right now and trafficking and murder and whatever is so bad that he said we have to legalize it to generate taxation. Of course, now, you know, what are the taxes going to be used for? Bigger government again? Again, taxation on drugs, you hear? How about cutting back on some of the benefits that you're giving to the bums in society? The deadbeats and the leeches. Does that work for you? You know, there is a thing as a human leech. A leech. We have a society that half work, 40% work, and 60% are leecheroos. So should we legalize or not? Let's start in a city where drugs are rampant, right from the top to the bottom. Bill in San Francisco, welcome to the program.
Yes, Mike, I would be totally opposed, and my reason is, I think we have to draw the line in the sand somewhere. That's kind of simplistic, but I think there's a large segment of society who probably doesn't do drugs to this day because it is illegal or illicit, and if you add them to the mix, it's obviously just like the prescription drugs are right now, it's going to expose a lot more teenagers to the
You
drug.
Are right. There's definitely that argument, and it's a rational argument. I remember covering this when I was a host on a local station 17 years ago, God, and we had a great guy on who was an undercover agent for the DEA. He was a friend of mine at the time. I lost touch with him. One of the great men, one of the gravest men I ever met. And Michael said, no, legalization would be a disaster. He said it would lead to more drug usage. Not less. Now, it's 16 years later, though, and we see the jails are overflowing with drug users. We see that there are murders. We see the corruption is spilling over the border. We see that our own government will not protect the American people. The drug gangs are becoming more and more emboldened. We have shootouts in the streets of San Francisco and other cities. Basically, it's a turf war for drug gangs. We know this. So if you decriminalize without legalizing, that's a little different, isn't it?
Yeah, but when you talk about tax revenue, I think I've read proposals of what kind of tax could be gotten if, like, say, the marijuana law passed in California, and the cost would come down so greatly if it was legalized that would the taxes that we generated equal the actual ultimate cost of society when you consider there's going to be more spousal abuse, more child abuse, more medical complications and the cost.
I agree with you up to a point, but you know, this is a devil's duo here. Both choices are bad. So which is the lesser of two evils right now? Because we see that the war on drugs has failed. We see that the criminalization of drugs has failed. We see that there are people in jail who are simply users. They're not suppliers. They're not dealers. When does this end? How many people have to be arrested until we finally do something different about it? And that's why Vicente Fox is asking the question. That, you know, having said that, everything you said is true as well. It's not either or, by the way. It's both and. It's both and. So are you for or against drug legalization? And I'd like to see what you have to say about it. The fact of the matter is, in San Francisco, drugs are legal anyway. They don't arrest marijuana users. Wherever you go, you smell that poison. Wherever you go, you smell that disgusting stink of marijuana, and you see the useless bum smoking it everywhere. So what's the difference if it's legal or not? Legalize it to take the profit out of it for the phonies with their fake medical marijuana clinics. Let them go get a real job for Obama. They go to work for the government instead of selling drugs. Medical marijuana is the biggest joke I've ever heard of in my life. You could use Marinol instead of inhaling rotten hot tobacco smoke. Hot smoke. You need the medical marijuana to stop puking. You know, I've heard that story 1,000 times. Don't tell me everyone there has cancer that's using medical marijuana. That's such rubbish. I want to stick to the legalization. That's all. Yes or no? Isaac in Salt Lake City, your opinion counts. Go ahead, please.
Hey, I'd say no, because I've been to Amsterdam several times where it's legal, and that place is a nut house. You see people running around peeing and pooing in broad daylight in the streets.
Well, it sounds like San Francisco.
The problem over there, they're actually starting to limit the pot houses. So, and then on top of that, you mix in with the availability of guns that Americans have, it'd be crazy. Moreover, we're on the verge of an economic depression. We need everyone on their A game. We don't need people stoned out of their minds. You know what I mean?
Well, I do know what you mean, but tell me if you think that the people who are going to use drugs are not using them already.
Well, like you said, you know, in San Francisco and places like that, it's already legal. So has it decreased crime there? The people that are smoking
there? No. It's a city that's out of control. It's an anarchy. It's a city run by, it's government anarchy in San Francisco. There is no government. The government in San Francisco is a microcosm of Obama's left-wing administration. It's a government against the people and against the people at every level. The people hate the government in San Francisco. The people hate the government in America. They hate it. They hate it with everything in them. They feel that the government is out of control. They feel government anarchy everywhere you turn in America. Nobody likes this government under Obama. It's a lawless America. Here you have a government that won't even protect the people of the state of Arizona who are trying to protect themselves. Instead, they attack the people of Arizona. This is like an autoimmune disease under Obama. It's like a crazed brain that sends out the defense cells to kill other defense cells. It's like an immune system gone awry, this government under Obama. Who ever heard of a federal government attacking a state government that's trying to defend itself? Don't tell me about slavery again. This has nothing to do with slavery. The people of Arizona know what drug gangs are doing to the state, and they don't want it anymore. So why is Obama taking a position that the people have no right to defend themselves? Because everything he does is upside down. That's why we turned his name around to Amabo. President Amabo is basically him. Everything he does is Amabo. In fact, it become a new noun. You know what I'm saying? A person, place, or a thing. You say, oh, you're acting like an Amabo. That could become a part of our language. Don't be an Amabo. That's not bad. It could go into Scrabble. Try to see if you could put Amabo into your Scrabble set and see if it becomes a noun. I'll be right back.
Savage.
My love must be a kind of blind love. I can't see anyone but you.
This is the Savage Nation, Rock and Roll Tuesday. It's an August show, but it's a very important topic, which is whether or not drugs should be decriminalized or legalized. Because the topic was brought up by ex-president of Mexico, Vicente Fox. I think it's a very important question. The prisons are overflowing. You know and I know that something has to change here. And you're going to hear arguments on both sides. The fact of the matter is, many of you favor legalization because you consider yourselves to be libertarian. But you have to think it through. We know that prohibition and criminalization has not worked. It produces excessive rates of incarceration, costs a ton of money. And drug use is an activity that is arbitrarily called a crime. So murder, rape, and robbery have always been considered inherently criminal acts, but drug use by itself is just consuming substances that were made illegal. You understand that? And it's quite arbitrary as to what is legal or illegal in terms of drugs. For example, alcohol consumption, which you know is legal, was once prohibited. You went to jail if you bought it and if you sold it. It's now legal. In the early 1900s, did you know opiates were sold in pharmacies? And that Coca-Cola contains small quantities of cocaine when it first came out. You know all of these stories. In fact, if you study the history of medications, and I call I've studied this for years because my early degrees were in a pharmacology-related field of phytochemistry, and I've always been fascinated by plant-derived chemicals and drugs. And I've worked in laboratories, I've collected medicinal plants, so I've been fascinated by it for decades. I've called the opium poppy the mother of all medicines, because it is. If you take out the moral objections to the use of opiates and just look at it as a medication, the opium poppy is one of the greatest gifts to mankind and also one of the greatest curses. It's how it's used, obviously. I mean, if you're suffering from pain that you can't tolerate, an opiate will be the difference between living and dying. If you abuse it to get high, of course, you know the results, okay? We know that. So where does that... I remember reading years and years ago, and I'm really heavily into this, that somewhere in the 1905 era, children, teething babies, teething infants, were given a liquid called Dilaudid. I believe it Dilaudid, I think. It was a tincture of opium on a little bit of a rag. They dipped it in a rag, and they put it on the baby's gums because they were in such pain, and they soothed the babies. I don't know. What did they produce? A generation of drug addicts? I don't know what the long-term effects were. You know what I'm saying? Today, people will, in Italy, I think they still use wine, a little napkin dipped in wine on the baby's gums when the baby's teething. They don't have to consult, you know, a doctor for that. You know, your grandmother or great-grandmother would have known that that would have stopped the babies from pain when the baby's teething. You know, babies are in pain when they teethe. You know what I'm saying? So you say, well, no, that should be illegal. It's only as a medication. Why? Why? More for the crackpots in the medical pharmaceutical establishment to send you out to medical care again? Everything is medical care. So, okay, so we're talking about this. Now, do I know the dangers of drugs? Yes, I've considered marijuana to be perhaps the most dangerous of all drugs for a couple of reasons. One, because it's an entry-level drug. It's very rare that a person starts with marijuana and ends with marijuana. You ask anybody who was addicted to cocaine where they started, they all started with marijuana. Now I heard the wise guy answer, they all started with milk. Okay, don't give me the wise guy answer. Marijuana is a gateway drug. There's no question about it. And I don't want to even argue that. Don't bother me with the same childish arguments that I've heard for 15 years. It's boring. I am talking about the relativity of various drugs. You know, low-dose marijuana for some people might be a benign drug. But even low-dose marijuana for people who are sensitive is a psychedelic and is a very dangerous drug. Marijuana can be a psychedelic experience for people who are highly strung, highly sensitive, etc. And they should never touch the stuff. Any more than an alcoholic can't have one drink. Many sensitive people cannot have one puff of a marijuana cigarette, no matter how mild. And I want to remind you that marijuana today is not the marijuana of your mother's age. It's about 7 to 12 times stronger than it was in the 60s, for example. Now, LSD should never be used. Never. So what's going to happen if you legalize some drugs and you leave other drugs illegal, like LSD? I mean, then what? What's going to happen then? You think people are going to say, I don't want LSD because... So in other words, this is a very complicated problem, but the massive incarceration is the issue. The drug gangs are a big issue. The dysfunctional laws, which lead to the prisons that are overflowing, is another story. The harms created by uncontrolled and unregulated illegal markets is another problem. Street crime, where you have automatic weapons being used between drug gangs as a relationship to the drug usage in this country. The unregulated dosages, the impure drugs is another problem. Unclean needles, the spread of disease is another problem. It's a very big, big story. So there are benefits. Don't say there are none. There are benefits and there are not benefits. Arguments for and against legalization. If we legalize drugs or decriminalize drugs, one, decrease crime from trafficking. Decrease gang wars. Decrease crimes committed to obtain drugs. Lower incarceration rates. More funds available. I don't go in for the treatment side. I don't believe in any of it. I don't think it works. I personally think the treatment is within. You want to kick drugs? Be strong. If you're a weak person, no treatment's ever going to help you. So then you have against legalization. There's many arguments against legalization. I give you 10 of them. You want to hear the number one reason for drugs being illegal? Illegal drugs are illegal because they're harmful. That's all. End of story. Smoked marijuana is not scientifically wise. It's a toxic poison. Marinol, the active ingredient in marijuana, is approved by medicine. And if anyone really needed medical marijuana, they should use Marinol. They don't need a joint. because the smoke they're getting is filled with five or six dangerous byproducts, which are going to lead to an additional cancer, incidentally. So don't give me the lie about medical marijuana. It's a backdoor to legalization. I'll tell you, but you don't even know this. You people don't even know how gullible you really are. Take a guess which madman funded for the last 10 years now legalizing drug discussions in Arizona and in California. George Soros, his so-called open society. Now, why would George Soros want drugs legalized in America? You think he cares about people? I don't believe he cares about people. My opinion is that he wants more stupid people than there already are. I think he wants more peons who are so doped up they don't even understand that they've lost all of their freedoms. That's my opinion. In other words, it's very much like the British dumping opium on the Chinese and addicting the entire nation of China to opium and turning them into absolute slaves. That's how their fortunes were made. Many, many fortunes were made on the opium trade. In fact, some great American families made their fortunes on the opium trade. You may not know this, but the president, the great hero of the liberals, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, if you research the middle name Delano, you will find that on his mother's side, the Delanos are an old New England family that made their fortune running opium on ships from into China. That's right. The Delano fortune was made as drug traffickers. Well, of course, that's how he became a liberal, but that's where they got the money from to become president a couple of generations later. You know what they say about money, don't you? At first it's red, and then it's green, and then finally, at first it's red, and then it's blue, and then it's white. In other words, it changes through time, through three generations. All money through that trade is red originally, and then it becomes white after the third generation.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I don't even like this song. That's all. It's the Savage Nation. We're talking about drug legalization or decriminalization because the former president of Mexico, Vicente Fox, says that the drug war is lost. The violence is so great. The corruption is impossible to stop. And the only thing that will stop it is legalization. We've been arguing about the pros and the cons. We know that there are too many people incarcerated who are drug users. We also know that drugs are illegal because they're dangerous. From marijuana to crack cocaine, all dangerous. There's nothing good about any of them. All dangerous. But we have a social crisis that needs resolution, and there's no perfect answer. You're going to have to weigh the pros and cons, and that's why it's worth talking about. And I was referring to a novel that I'd read when I was very young, and it was entitled Mile High by Richard Condon, C-O-N-D-O-N. And what the book is about is about how a single, ruthless gangster named Eddie West imposes prohibition upon an unwary populace. And he does so by funding ladies' groups who are against the use of alcohol, and he exploits all of the do-gooders of his time, just as you know is being done today, how the left is being used to drag us to hell. And the book is called Mile High, and it talks about the prohibition movement against alcohol. And he says in his fiction that it was created by one greedy New York Irish Sicilian banker who turns his inherited knowledge of the synergy between New York ward politics, big business, and organized crime into the blueprint for a takeover of the soul of the nation. It draws from Asbury's The Gangs of New York. And he wrote other well-known masterpieces. I don't know if you know who Richard Condon is. He wrote The Manchurian Candidate, one of the great, phenomenal books of all time. He wrote the Prezi's Honors series, which, if you saw the movie, I mean, unto itself, unbelievable. Mile High is the book I'm talking about, by Richard Condon. I remember when I read it, I was really knocked out by it in 1969, because it talks about how the man pulled off Prohibition, how he funded the hysteria of the women's movement, in particular at that time, to talk about banning alcohol. And he was, of course, getting ready to become one of the greatest bootleggers, which he became. And so now here we are today. Here we are today. Richard Condon, born in 1915, died in 1996. Great writer. And here's what he wrote about it, Mile High. Prohibition fused the amateurism and catch-as-catch-can national tendencies of the early days of the Republic with a more modern, highly organized lust for violence and the quick buck. It fused the need to massacre 1,200,000 American Indians and 10 million American buffalo, the lynching bees, the draft riots, bread riots, gold riots, and race riots, the constant wars, the largest rats in the biggest slums, boxing and football, the loudest music, the most strident exploitative press, with the entire wonderful promise of tomorrow and tomorrow, always dragging the great nation downward into greater violence and more unnecessary deaths, into newer and more positive celebration of non-life. Also that the savage, simple-minded people might be educated into greater frenzies of understanding that power and money are the only desirable objects for this life. Now you understand why I loved it when I was 18. I wish this guy was alive. I'd have him on the show. You see what I'm getting at? So he wrote about this, in a way, what to do with alcohol. And as you well know, I told you that the opium trade made the Delanos a wealthy New England family and led to the ascension of a Franklin Delano Roosevelt to the presidency because of the money. And there's another famous American family that, as you well know, was built upon Prohibition. Need I mention the name? Another great liberal. It's interesting to me how all of the liberals are all involved in one way or another at some point with something illicit. It's just something phenomenal about it. Now, there's another way to go. There's another way to go with this argument. You could argue that instead of legalizing, that would tend to have a chilling effect on the use of drugs. There would be no fireplace smoke afterwards. But I'm not recommending that draconian solution. I remember when I first went to Malaysia many years ago, I couldn't believe the billboards I saw on the way in from Kuala Lumpur Airport. It said, using drugs is a crime punishable by death. It tended to put a damper on the hippies who were flying into Asia. They kind of bypassed Malaysia. It was a very strict Islamic nation. And it was a great lay. I loved Malaysia, but I felt very good there because, I don't know, there was no crime at the time, almost no crime. It was very simple. Billboard, monster. Monster billboard. Using drugs is a crime in small letters punishable by death. Don't use them. That tended to be better than a drug war. Worked real fine. They hung you, that's all. Use drugs, you get a nice hangman's noose. And so all of the hippies that were on their way to Afghanistan or on the way back from Afghanistan seemed to bypass Malaysia. It was not a stop on their way. There's another show, you know, I love this show. What was it? Not the one on TV about Locked Up Abroad, Nat Geo. You know what I love about it? All these drug dealers. I was like, oh, my God, I didn't mean it. I'm a nice person. All I was doing was smuggling drugs. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, it was horrible. How could you have sympathy for these people? They wanted to make a quick buck. So they smuggled drugs in and out of this or that. They got caught, and they were in jail in, like, Pakistan, living in a dung hole, and they're supposed to feel bad for them. Well, how could you have sympathy for a character like that? And they sit there in retrospect years later like they're some superhero. Now you understand we have such a degenerate society because of the vermin in the media. Look who they're glorifying. Instead of glorifying a social worker or a teacher or a doctor, you choose one of the caring professions. Tell me something. You think that the vermin of Hollywood will produce a movie about the ophthalmologists who were just killed by the Taliban? You think the vermin of Hollywood would make that into a film and show their heroic lives? Instead, they'll show you some degenerate drug dealer or drug addict and tell you to have sympathy for them, played by Johnny Depp. That's all. Supposed to glorify all the garbage because they're all sick. They're all drug addicts. 99% of them are mental cases in Hollywood. You know it and I know it. Don't argue with me. That's why the country's upside down. So anyway, what I'm saying to you is legalize or not legalize. Now we can have music now that I got you hooked, because everybody listening to this show has an opinion on this matter, and your heart is pounding. Your heart is pounding wanting to get on the air and explain your position. And so in light of that, we're going to play Great Balls of Fire by Jerry Lee Lewis as I wait for your calls here on the Savage Nation. We're going to have Jerry Lee Lewis and Great Balls of Fire.
You shake my nerves and there you go. My brain. Too much love drives a man insane. You broke my will, but what a thrill. Goodness gracious, great balls of fire. I let in love what I thought it was funny. You came along and moved me, honey.
You make drugs illegal in America and punishable by death. It's the end of the movie industry and the end of the record industry. The hip-hop movement ends. Suddenly we have a sane nation again. We'll have waltzes. We'll have waltzes and polka music. You'll be able to go out shopping without getting shot on the way to the theater in San Francisco. I'll be right back.
So kind.
Summer night, I held you tight, you and I.
It is the Savage Nation and Rock and Roll Tuesday it is. Rock and Roll Tuesday it is. We're talking about drugs and the former president of Mexico saying that they should be legalized, even though he personally opposes it because they're harmful, because of the social costs of incarceration, etc. And I know this is something that you're not going to agree on because there's arguments on both sides of this issue. And so we're going to take your calls on it. Now, as I said, you can go to legalization or decriminalization on one hand. On the other hand, and you're going to have more people trying drugs than would try them now. Make no question. There's no question about it. I don't care what anyone says. If it's legal, they're going to use it. They're going to try it. Go ahead. It's legal now. You know, put that needle in your arm, honey. Well, I don't want to use needles. All right, then just snort the H. Okay, so don't tell me it's not going to happen. It would happen. And you'll have more addicts yet than you have now. That's number one. They won't be incarcerated, but they'll be treated. More Obamacare costs, all right? So how do you end this? So you go the other way then. You take the hard right-wing approach and you say, do what Malaysia did. Use of drugs is illegal and punishable by death. That means use of, not even forget the importation. You get caught using drugs, okay, maybe they don't kill you the first time. The third time you get executed. That would put a real damper on someone, you know, slipping a little dope into a kid's mouth. That would be the end of drugs. And just think of the country. Most people in the movie business would be executed. The people in the music industry would disappear. And here's what you'd hear on the airwaves. What I'm about to play is all you'd hear on the airwaves. Listen, let's hear it. Some would say it wouldn't be a bad America if we could do that. I mean, I'd rather hear this than rap music. All right, you get the picture. So I'm being a little comedic in the political arena because that's the way I am. I happen to like polka music myself. That's my business. Waltzes I was never into. Polka I was into. I like it. Do I go to it a lot? No. If it's in the city, I go to it once in a while. I like it. It's cheerful. There's beer. There's fun. The Bricklewurst, Nickelwurst, Hicklewurst, Picklewurst, Jicklewurst, Joe Wurst, I'm Wurst all aboard. I don't eat the worst products, but I certainly like the best products in the liquid variety while listening to the polka music. So, you want to talk about the legal? Yes or no? Bob in New York on WOR. Go ahead. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I got to say, Mike, I'm 100% for legalization. And the reason is you win the war with a stroke of a pen. The crime disappears. What they're doing now has failed. It's not working. They're spending billions of dollars with government agencies to put planes and boats and all kinds of stuff in there, and it's not working. So, and I disagree.
If it was legalized, it would be the end of the Democrat Party.
Yeah, hopefully.
They would have no reason to exist. They'd have no money to funnel into drug treatment and drug...
That would be a good thing.
But, yeah, the Democrats would have to move to Hungary in order to practice their trade. Thanks for the call. So there's a man who's for it. He says 100% for it. My friend Emil from San Francisco has a strong opinion on the other side. Emil, go ahead, please. You're a former DEA agent. You've worked the streets. You know what's at stake. What do you think?
Absolutely, Mike. Thank you. And I'm going to have to turn my back on this legalizing, decriminalizing most controlled substances. and I take a look at the family unit, the destruction to the family unit would be terminal, Mike. And you and I, we both got a friend, Mike Levine, Needle. Both my brothers were junkies. And if you put it out there, I mean, look at San Francisco. You got 8 out of 10 walking around.
They're stoned. I can't believe the streets now. Everywhere you turn, there's the stink of marijuana. I've never seen anything like it. The city's a cesspool. And what is this, the shooting on downtown? They won't identify the shooters, Emil. That a woman got shot, a 50-year-old tourist killed by a stray bullet when the gangs were shooting. They won't even show who the gangs are, Emil. Why is that?
And that's because of Mayor Gavin Newsom and the sanctuary city concept. That's what you get when you get a sanctuary city. Anything goes. And this is the results of it. And to listen to him...
Did you say San Francisco is a stanctuary city or a sanctuary city?
Sanctuary, perfect.
No, but the woman is walking with her husband at 9 o'clock at night in the theater district, and two gangs have a shootout Sunday night, and she gets hit with her. He's walking with her. How are you, honey? And he looks, and she's dead, and it falls down on the street. And wait, two teenagers are shot from the same gangs. And the vermin in the newspaper won't even show pictures of the perps.
Well, and it's right there by Max's restaurant, one of my favorite diners over there. It's a
what do you go down there for, schmaltz?
Mike.
Hey, Emil, you're retired, so you're retired, but you worked the toughest of the tough. Can you tell the people, you can't say where you worked. I mean, what countries did you work in?
Oh, I was strictly domestic, my own choice. But, you know, I did the big cities, Chicago, Detroit, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Cleveland, Ohio, and of course, out here in San Francisco, where I wrapped it up.
How is Mike doing these days? He wrote that book, The Great White Lie. He was out here 15, 16 years ago. We had a lot of fun. He's still around, isn't he?
Your show back there in New York. And,
oh, good for him.
Healthy. Yeah.
No, he worked in Bolivia as an undercover agent, didn't he?
Yes, and he's a Spanish speaker.
Here's a guy, a Jewish guy from New York, who looks Italian, who played a mafioso and speaks Spanish, Bolivian Spanish fluently. How the hell did he pull that off?
Hey, Mike was dynamic, and just looking at him would scare you to death.
I was never afraid of him because, like with all tough guys, I knew I was safe.
Yeah, you knew.
You know what I'm saying? Emil, it's a funny statement. The toughest guys I've met, I've always felt very calm around because I knew exactly where I stood with them, and I knew that they're usually very reliable people. I'll tell you who you have to watch out for. It's the cowards who are more dangerous than the tough guys.
Hey, you got to watch out for, especially here in San Francisco, Mike.
Oh, yeah, especially the freaks on the marijuana flying by in a bicycle who would kill you as fast as you can say Gavin Newsom.
Never go anywhere without a gun.
So are you playing, are you still doing bocce with the boys on the hill?
Bocce ball, the social club. I'm out and about doing Meet the Author. My book's getting legs now. So all is
Eric,
good.
Wait a minute, Emil, let me ask you something. I read that they want to build a bocce court in downtown San Francisco. Well, what's that all about? Some people are opposed to it.
Well, yeah, it's because of the noise level, and they just don't want it. Basically,
noise level? What, you mean having loud rock bands is not noisy? Or the morons on the bicycles with the Friday nights tying up traffic? That's not a hazard? It was up to me. I take their bicycles and throw them in the bay and arrest them all. That'd be the end of mass, critical mass on a Friday night. Those jerks, those idiots, those morons. And I'm a bicycle rider. Those asses. They're just asses.
We're going to take over this.
Any sane city, the police go in and they throw the bikes into the bay and they arrest the jerks. They have nothing better to do but tie up traffic. Whee!
You're bringing it all back.
Oh, don't get me started. I'm so glad you're listening to the show. 1-800-4-4-9-8-2-5-5. It says in the Savage Nation. And here we are. Good time last night, and here we are on the show. We're talking about a very controversial topic, which is, should we legalize or decriminalize drugs in order to stop the gang infestation and the social costs of incarceration?
Savage.
Rock and roll, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, whatever, Monday, Sunday, on the Savage Nation.
I am not going to agree to any violation that I have not committed. This OCE was created by Democrats under Nancy Pelosi's watch, and this whole politicizing of so-called corruption and draining the swamp, setting up what I consider an unconstitutional and illegal organization. We have said something about it.
That's old Maxine Waters, one of the great congresswomen of all time, who just goes in circles right there. A lifetime of liberal double talk. It turns out she steered money to a bank her husband was involved in. So she's now sort of under indictment for an ethics committee. And she's saying, well, the committee was created by Democrats under Nancy Pelosi. And then she catches herself. And then she says, but it's been politicized, meaning she got caught, hung by her own petard, in other words. Now she says, I will not be a sacrificial lamb. And then she goes to the next stage and says, it's all racism. Because her and Rangel, the first two to be snared, now suddenly it's all racism. And she blames Bush. Let's hear the Bush blame.
The time that I went to the meeting, this was the Bush White House. And I do know that there was someone in the meeting who was a mentee of Karl Rove. I think he's the one that started all of this.
All right, I tell you a story walking, Maxine. That's all. Yeah, Bush did it to you. Bush is who steered the money to your husband's bank. It wasn't you. Bush made you do it. The white racist had a hood on, and he forced you to steal the money. You didn't want to do it. It was against your will because you're an innocent person. You're being picked on because of your race. And it was the evil white men in the Bush administration who forced you to not drain the swamp. You know, you listen to her, you can't believe it. She doesn't believe she got caught. This is unbelievable. Here's DNC Chair Tim Kaine saying Obama's still doing the great work America expects and defends Michelle's vacation. Hold it. Where's the Michelle's vacation part? Clip 12. Listen to this whopper. Here's the big whopper. This has more calories and saturated fat per word than any statement made today. Listen to this.
I think it's wrong to talk about the First Lady's family vacation as a politician. She's a mom. And you know what? I've been in the elected office in political life for 17 years, and I've got a wife and I've got three kids. And when you're in office, you don't give up being a mom and a family member, too.
Mom, she's a mom.
This was an opportunity for Michelle to join friends and friends'
All right, Mr. Kaine, all right, stop it right. Okay, Mr. Kaine, a question for you. I know she's an innocent mom who just happens to have Air Force Two and $75,000 a day of taxpayer money for, you know, bodyguards and hotel rooms. Let me ask you a little question, Mr. Kaine, since she's only a simple mom, Michelle Obama. How come she didn't spend that money in San Diego and talk about the tourism in America instead of in Spain? Can you answer that question instead of double-talking yourself? Because no one believes a word you're saying. You're part of the hot air brigade that America detests. Detests! The whole country is turned on Obama because of this let-them-eat-cake attitude. You understand this? Gil in Mississippi, you're on the Savage Nation.
When you pronounced Obama's name backwards earlier, you took me back to ninth grade Latin class. You said Amabo.
Amabo. President Amabo. Since everything he does seems to be backwards or works out that way anyway, I thought we should start referring to him as his name is Mr. Amabo.
Well, I'd never heard it before except in Latin class. In Latin, it's a verb. It means, literally, I will love.
I will love. So it's perfect for Obama. There's no insult intended.
Well, it's exactly backwards. You consider that the verb is backwards, so you might draw your own conclusions. Or you might add an object to the phrase, I will love money, I will love power, something like that.
Are you still knowledgeable about Latin, Gil?
Not that good. Not that good, frankly.
I am not at all knowledgeable. I know botanical Latin and I know some zoological Latin. But, you know, it's interesting. When I was studying language years ago, I read that in English we're limited to the word love. One word, love. I love my mother. I love my dog. Oh, I love this pizza. I love my shoes. You know what I'm saying? I love my girlfriend. I love my wife. All one word, love. So we get confused because we have only a single verb for love, while in the Latin there are 16 verbs for love. And so when you say I love this pizza, you use a different verb than I love my wife. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. It's actually Greek that has many, many forms of the verb love. And
they're very good at very, very different forms of love, the ancient Greeks in particular.
Thank you, Michael.
Yeah, they are very good at that. They need many different verbs for love in Greece. That's why their economy's in such good shape. But we're not too far behind because we become Greek. You know what I'm saying? And I don't mean Greek formula. 1-800-449-8255. So we're talking about legalizing marijuana. It's not enough that we have a nation of idiots. All you got to do is watch Housewives of New Jersey and see the low-life Scungilis with the facial. I never saw anything like this. The lowest of Scungili people are held up. They're all movie stars. They got Scungilis from New Jersey on the House, Real Housewives of New Jersey. These are like human Scungilis with a hairdo. I have never seen anything in my life. It's beyond the burlesque. It is below anything I've ever imagined possible could be shown on television. It's the closest thing to Ringling Brothers, Barnum and Bailey reality shows. We don't need freak shows. You watch The Real Housewives of New Jersey and you see people you can't believe exist with egos on them that are beyond comprehension. And the face, who was the doctor who butchered that woman? And the daughters, how could the daughters turn out sane, I ask myself, with a mother like that? The daughters are already movie stars. Then the whole clan of Scungilis, they take them to Venice. I was flipping last night. They're all going to Venice. I never saw it. Scungilis do Venice. Hey, what are we doing in a boat here? Hey, I want to go to the store. I want to buy clothes. Oh, is it open? I want to go to Chanel. Mrs. Scungili needs some Chanel clothing to match her perfectly. Who do you think Chanel is for? It's the Scungilis of the world. Who would buy it? An upscale wasp doesn't need Chanel. Who needs the Chanel? It's the Scungilis of the world and people from Japan. I go to Union Square. I see who's shopping like locusts. They go crazy in these stores, like madmen. All they do is like clothing. What's the obsession? But if you watch The Real Housewives in New Jersey, you realize if you think it's bad now, could you imagine legalized drugs? I can't imagine it getting worse than this, but it would. So right now, the scales are being weighed left, right, back and forth. And I'm tilting. Come on, I'm just kidding. But, I mean, there are people who would like that. They would like to see that because it would end the movie business, as you know it. The record business would be over. Half of the politicians would disappear. And we'd have music again, as I said to you. You'd have polka music, so you could play it now. You can show them what America would sound like. Every station that has music, all you'd hear is this. Imagine an America with polka music. They got the joke already. That's next case. Do I have to talk about the Bridge to Nowhere? And I'm sorry he died. I didn't feel anything for him. I don't know the man. They're all crying like they knew him.
Cat Stevens dead today.
They're all like somber. They don't even know who the... All right, it happens. He's 86. He had a good life. And the plane went down and bingo, it's over. It happens. The guy was on a hunting trip. You know, I love what they say. He was doing the thing he loved best, screaming his head off, saying, God, please don't. When you ever come up with the stuff people say about someone when they die, at least he died what he loved the best. Yeah, sure, he loved going down those last few minutes. He was doing the thing he loved best, which is screaming for God to save him. I'm not mocking him. I'm just saying, well, at least she died. He died doing what he loved, climbing mountains and falling off a mountain. You see one case after another, they fall off a high climbing. He died. She died when she was loved doing best. You know what the last seconds were like? She didn't love it, falling off the cliff. I never understood that. What do you mean she died doing what she loved best? What does that have to do with that? I never understood half the things people say. They make no sense. I analyze them. My mother used to say to me, don't look into everything so deeply. Because I looked into everything so deeply. She said, don't look into everything so deeply. You look too carefully. How could you look at anything other than carefully? And, you know, that's why I'm on radio now, because I look too carefully into everything. Don't look so carefully. Be a liberal Democrat like everyone around you, you know, so you can elect Mambo for president. President Mambo. I mean, a Mambo. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Legal, not legal. Legal, not legal. Who's for and who's again? Who is against legalization? Some is for it, some are against it. Here, Tommy in New York is against it. Tommy, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, first of all, before I tell you, I want to thank you for the education you have been giving me in the last 5 years. Every evening when I listen to you, from the bottom of my heart, I want to thank you. I'm not an educated guy, but you have set me on a path to question, to look at everything. So
right. Well, that's the road to self-discovery. It's the road to discovering what a society is made of and how it ticks. And it's the road to liberation. Remember that. A free mind is the most dangerous thing in a country like ours.
As far as the legalization of drugs, I've always been against things like that. What I know from you, like how Hollywood and the college professors have debased our society, this will only further debase it. All you need is kids.
All right, so you're. I'm only cutting you off because I can't really clear you. because he said it would further debase society. All right. Who's, again, he says, who is for it? Chicago Bob, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael. First of all, you're going to stop listening to any jazz influenced by heroin or marijuana. You're going to be left.
There goes all of my favorite jazz artists.
Manhattan Transfer and Kenny G left, I think. But
no,
really,
my favorite jazz artist happens to be John Coltrane, but I don't know what his drug of choice was.
The jazz drug. But my point
no,
is...
Was he known to have been hooked up on something?
I believe so, but there were so many that were that maybe it's just caught in my memory. I don't want to, you know, disgrace anybody. I'm
all right, that's nice of you. That's sensitive and fair. So what's your point today?
Point is, you said before, like, oh, when they legalize, I don't know if you're just, you know, joking, but like, oh, everyone's going to run out and get a needle and try heroin. I've smoked pot. My friends smoke pot. We've had these kind of conversations, and no one has ever said, like, man, when they legalize it, I'm going to try it. And I know, like, my parents, my family, there's nobody I know that's just waiting for it to be legalized.
What, you mean your father smoked marijuana, too?
Call in, would they try it if it was legalized?
No, I'm saying, does your father smoke marijuana?
He used to feel that people that did should be shot. He's changed over the years, though.
So he was a hard, hard right-winger when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah.
And now today he's what? He's become mellow?
Well, I think he's just realized that there's better ways to combat this and just put our money...
Well, because we're living with a scourge right now. You have too many people incarcerated. Over 1 million Americans are in prison. Now, not all of them are innocent users. In fact, they plead down to use when they actually were dealers. I've studied this in some detail. So you've got to watch out for the statistics. The fact is that we hear that... you say... drug offenders in prisons, right, are in only for possession, the rest for trafficking. But they're deceptive numbers because many in prison for possession are actually in prison after repeated offenses, number one. And many of those serving a sentence for possession were actually arrested for trafficking but plead down to a lesser offense of possession. You see what I mean?
Yeah, but I think it's working out well in Portugal since they've legalized, though.
Who has?
Portugal.
Oh, yeah, they've given us an awful lot lately.
I'm just saying, I think... All
I mean, tell me what Portugal has produced for the world recently.
And it's just driven down like they're...
The only thing Portugal ever gave the world were conquistadors who brutalized South America.
Saying it's helping their...
And port wine, because they were so whacked out that they let their wine turn bad on the ships. And then were such good salesmen and con men that they called it port wine.
That was back before they legalized drugs. Now
I'm joking.
It.
Come on. You know me. I have a sense of humor. I can't help myself.
The stats there are looking really well. I mean, it's early, but, like, everything you'd look at...
Well, you know. Let me give you the opposite, okay? Marijuana was legalized in Alaska in the 70s, all right? What happened in Alaska when it had been legalized? The Alaskan teenage consumption of dope was at more than twice the rate of teenagers elsewhere, a direct result of the Alaska Supreme Court ruling making it legal. And so then, in 1990, it got so bad... that there was a voter initiative that criminalized any possession of marijuana. And then in 2003, a state appellate court affirmed the right of Alaskans to possess a small amount of dope in their homes. Anything under 4 ounces might be deemed for personal use. And anything over that amount is still illegal since it is assumed that the person is dealing drugs. So you have to look more carefully at what the results are. So the bottom line here is that legalization in Alaska led to a double the use of teenagers, double the use of marijuana amongst teenagers. It didn't decrease it, it increased it. So, you see, that's why this discussion goes on. Because if it was as clear-cut as legalize or make it even more criminal, we would have done it already. But since there's no direct answer to it, it's very hard to come up with a definitive statement that is going to, you know, let us say, be the answer here. And as you well know, the politicians are not capable of original thought, number one, and they don't want to touch the subject. When have you last heard a politician talk about drugs? Never. It was not a topic in any election. Never. Just as they refused. You know, they always, remember the debate between Obama and, who did he run against? I forgot. Oh, McShane. You remember how they set it up, the government media complex, how I ridiculed it? They didn't even discuss immigration. They used the baggy-eyed Bolshevik. They used several baggy-eyed Bolsheviks from PBS. I knew it was a shoo-in already. They did not touch the immigration topic. It was all set up against McCain. Now, he didn't need any help to destroy himself. He was doing the best he could. So here we are. And by the way, the Buick is the best-selling car in China. I did say at the time that after McCain lost, him and Cindy ought to go and open up a Buick dealership in Tibet. He should have followed my advice. He'd be doing better than he is now. I'll be right back.
Savage. currency, and I think it is, to help our local and state governments out, what about me? I don't want anyone to feel embarrassed, awkward. Hey, if I was you, I may want me to go away too. I am not going away. I am here. And I do recognize that.
We're all Charlie Wrangler. It's a horrible thing. It's a horrible way to end a career, getting caught like that. Him and Maxine Waters. Of course, they're using the racism argument. That's coming next. You'll hear the Congressional Black Caucus next say it's being picked on because of race. Yeah, go ahead. No one buys it. Even, you know, educated black people don't buy that anymore. They know it's a double talk. You know, but of all the people who got snared, of all of them, actually, I have more sympathy for Charlie Wrangler than anybody. I mean, the guy did fight in the Korean War. He is a patriot. But there are others. There are other patriots on the Republican side who got caught. You even forgot some of their names. One of the great aces of Vietnam. I think he is still in jail. I mean, that was a heartbreak. Whoever threw the book at him, it was a disgrace. And it happened under Bush. Remember him? Cunningham. Duke Cunningham. A great ace of the Vietnam War. By today's standards, he was a Boy Scout. He got caught with a relatively small skim and a little kickback compared to what these bums are doing today. Like a Boy Scout. I never saw anything like it. They gave him 8 years. 8 years is what the Vietnam War ace got. So we're like, you can have no sympathy for anybody anymore. And who threw the book at Duke Cunningham? George Bush. It happened under the George Bush watch. The same president who attacked our brave Marines who were accused falsely in combat situations by verminous pinko cowards from left-wing magazines who were embedded into the troops by the jerks in the Defense Department who are sleeper cells for the left. What military would want left-wing reporters trailing them around except the military that's destroying itself? The nation is like has an autoimmune disease. The liberals are like a disease, like a diseased defense cell that turned on its own body. The radical left hates the police, hates the military, hates the church, hates every bulwark against everything wrong with everything that's protecting society from imploding. The vermin on the left are attacking. As I say to you, if you study the autoimmune system, the immune system of a human being, you'll find that it's beautifully designed by a genius called God. If you don't like the word God, then it's designed by through evolution. Take either way. Genius, absolutely genius. I wrote a book about it back in the 80s called Maxim Immunity. Doesn't make me the world's expert, but I know more than you do about the immune system. And the fact of the matter is, if you study it, it's more complicated than a Swiss watch. More beautiful than a Swiss watch. But when a Swiss watch goes off, it becomes San Francisco. When a Swiss watch goes bad, it becomes a city like San Francisco where the police, who are established to be our defense cells, are told not to defend us for fear of offending the invading organisms who are destroying us. When a Swiss watch goes off, it's like the U.S. Marines who are tried for crimes they didn't commit by defending us against the world's worst vermin, throat-cutting throwback, descendants of the zoological order from almost another species. They're fighting animals from another century. And you expect them to follow the rules that some punk coward lawyer in Washington establishes for them? And when they don't do it, you give them a court-martial? That's called an insane autoimmune disease. Social autoimmune disease.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I rise to the floor because the newspapers and the media have indicated that there is a concern about some of the members in this House that I retire or remove myself from this body. And I've always tried to play by the rules. And I cannot think of anybody that has encouraged me to speak here.
Hey, little darling. Oh, 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 little darling. Oh, 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 well. How are you?
Here we are, Rick, on the Savage Nation. There's so much to talk about. You've got the corruption scandals of Maxine Waters and Charlie Rangel. And as you would expect from a radical left-wing corrupt woman such as Maxine Waters, she's saying it's racism, that they're only attacking African-Americans. Unbelievable. Well, very believable. Isn't that what you'd expect from Maxine Waters, who has scammed the system her entire life? To revert back to what got her where she is, screaming racism in a crowded nation? You know, last night, after the show, I walked along San Francisco's waterfront. And I stopped in one of my favorite places I haven't been to years, called the Waterfront Restaurant on Broadway in the Embarcadero. My friend, the owner, Al Falke, was there. So I went in with a friend, and I said to myself, I'm not going to drink. I don't want to drink. I haven't had a drink in 3 days. Then I decided to have a drink. So one drink led to a third martini. And a guy that we met, a veterinarian from the Med Center, was there. Great guy. Told me a joke. And after two drinks, it sounded good. I don't know if it's still going to sound good, but he said, you know, when Ronald Reagan was president, we had great artists like Bob Hope. We had great singers like Johnny Cash. And now that we have Obama as president, there is no hope and no cash. I don't know, it sounded great last night. I still think it's very funny because it's clean. It's cute. It's the kind of joke you can tell your children. And then we had a lot of fun talking. Then I went down to Alioto's and I had a dinner. Really a great night, one of those great nights. You know what I'm saying? Where mortality is pushed aside for a few hours with the help of ethyl alcohol. And then you wake up in the morning and it's even worse. You realize you are mortal after all. You were foolish to think you had wings. But the news is pretty good. The news is pretty good. Here we have she's a sweetheart, Contessa Brewer of MSNBC. But dumb? Dumb as the day is long. I've never seen anyone as cluelessly dumb as this woman. They're running a segment on the Christian Afghan aid workers who were slaughtered by the Taliban. And she has the nerve to ask if the Taliban killed them because they were trying to convert Muslims to Christianity. In other words, Contessa Brewer actually took the side of the Taliban without even knowing it. She's that stupid. Unbelievable to me. And we had Charlie Rangel's floor speech, worth hearing. Maxine Waters saying, I'm not guilty of any violations. She said, I want to go to trial or whatever you call this because I don't deserve this. Now, she said, this is a swamp, and I didn't do anything wrong. Now, it's true, her husband was in a bank, on a bank, banking board, while she steered money from the taxpayers to that bank. But then she screamed, we shall overcome every step of the way. I guess if she can overcome this, she can overcome anything. And I suppose she might be able to get away with it with a little help from the Congressional Black Caucus. You know what I'm saying? I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com today. Here are some of the questions that we played with today, and we'll go through on the Savage Nation. The Taliban kills Christian aid workers who were there, ophthalmologists, great doctors, good people, and a psycho on MSNBC, more snotty nonsense by chicks, actually pushes the Taliban propaganda asking if they were killed because they're trying to convert Muslims to Christianity. Number two, Obama's pushing another stimulus bill and a jobs bill and blaming Bush. When will old gray Obama be held accountable for what his economic failures really are? Mexico's drug war, blaming the U.S. for illegal arms and the legalization of drugs in Mexico. Mexico ex-president Fox calls for drug legalization. He may have something there, by the way. He said he's against it personally, which I am, But the slaughter has to stop, and the only way to get the criminals out of it is to legalize it. You know? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. This is the Savage Nation. We're open for business. All right, I'll be right back.
Savage.
I wonder who wrote the book of love.
Tell me, who wrote the book of love? I've got to know the end.
You know, the Obama administration is talking about taxing what they consider the rich people to pay for their communist, socialist, Marxist agenda. Joining us now from the Cato Institute is Dan Mitchell, whose recent article says that the middle class is the one that is going to suffer the collateral damage from this. Before we have Dan on, I got to say that my book, Trickle Up Poverty, is all about Obama's unprecedented attack on the middle class. Yeah, Trickle Up Poverty on Amazon.com. Anyway, Dan Mitchell, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, glad to be on your show. The Obama White House seems to think that it can go after the rich with high tax rates and punitive double taxation of dividends and capital gains and a renewed 55% death tax, and that's going to somehow give them more money to spend to buy votes with other people's money. But in reality, what's going to happen is that the high tax rates are going to cause rich people to move their money out of productive investments into tax shelters, the economy will be weaker, and the middle class will be the ones suffering because of the slower economic growth.
Well, why are they choosing to attack the middle class?
The White House is looking at very simple politics on this. They figure that if they go after the top 2% or top 5% or whatever their dividing line is, they can go to 95% of voters and say, hey, guess what? I'm going to take money from the rich guy on the other side of town and give it to you. And the electoral math, at least from their perspective, is very simple. What I don't think they understand, though, is that the American people want to be better off by earning more income. They don't want to steal from their neighbors. And this is why the whole class warfare approach has never been popular in America. It may work in Europe, where they have sort of these historical things of the gilded nobility and things like that. But in America, we've always had this tradition that people can start poor and get rich by working hard and living an honest life. And so the American people are not as susceptible to this divisive class warfare rhetoric that we're seeing from the White House.
Don't they understand that this will not work?
We have a major problem with the Obama administration. Almost nobody there has any real private sector experience. And so they think that rich people, investors, entrepreneurs, people like that, are just going to sit around like fatted calves awaiting slaughter when higher tax rates are put into effect. But what happens in the real world when you do these policies, when you increase the dividend tax rate from 15% to nearly 40%, when the capital gains tax rate goes up by a third, when higher income tax rates come in, when you have this huge 55% death tax coming from zero this year, rich people, maybe they're not smart, but you know what? Their financial advisors, their tax lawyers, and their accountants are smart. And so they wind up pulling their money out of the productive sector of the economy and figuring out how to shelter it from this greedy grab by the politicians. Now, what does that mean for you and me and the rest of the middle-class people of the country? It means that not as much money is being invested. And I don't care whether you're a Marxist, a socialist, or whatever school of economic thought, they all agree on one thing. You can't have long-run economic growth without saving and investing. It's sort of the old theory that a farmer has to set aside some seed corn today for next year's crop. Well, we need to set aside some of our income today to save and invest if we want more growth in the future. And the administration's policy is a war on capital formation. It's a war on savings and investment. And that's not going to hurt rich people, because rich people will just put their money in the tax shelters and the municipal bonds and things like that. But it will hurt the rest of us, because our economy will not be as competitive. The jobs are going to be created in China and India instead. And we're going to wind up with a more stagnant economy, which isn't going to hurt Donald Trump and Warren Buffett and Bill Gates. It's going to hurt you and me and everyone in the audience.
How long until we see these effects?
Well, I don't know if this is good news or a silver lining, but at least we can look at it this way. If they put in place higher taxes, it's not as if the economy automatically falls into a recession. It means we have slower growth. And this is the best way to think about it is look at Western Europe. Look at stagnant welfare states like France. Why is it that France only grows maybe 1.5% a year, whereas the U.S. historically grows 3% a year? Well, it's because France has high taxes and excessive government. And so what Obama is doing, and frankly, Bush was guilty of making government bigger as well, but what Obama's doing is he wants us to have higher taxes and bigger government like France. That means we're going to have stagnant economic performance like France. The economy will still grow in any average year, but it will grow at a slower rate. Now, why does this matter? Here's what people in the audience need to remember. If you look at the average French person, their living standards are 30 to 40% below the living standards of the average American. So think about it this way. Imagine what your family budget is and take away 30 to 40%. What is that going to do? That's the price of Obamanomics. That's the price of high taxes and excessive government. If we become like France, we're going to have French living standards, and that's a big drop compared to what America has today.
Where do you think it goes from here?
Well, it's very interesting. As I'm sure many of your listeners understand, on December 31st at midnight, the 2001 and 2003 tax cuts go away. So we have this automatic tax increase that takes effect next January 1st, and Congress and the White House would have to affirmatively change existing law to keep those tax cuts alive. Now, Obama's playing class warfare. He says, well, I'm willing to keep some of the tax cuts, but not for the investors and entrepreneurs. In other words, the evil rich people. Well, in all likelihood, because the Democrats have the votes and because Obama has the veto pen, even if some of the Democrats on Capitol Hill got religion, it's very likely that these higher tax rates will kick in next year. We're going to go from a 0% death tax to a 55% death tax, higher dividend taxes, more double taxation on capital gains, you name it. Not to mention, of course, all the taxes coming in because of Obama's government-run health care scheme. These things are going to cause our economy to grow slower. Not a recession necessarily. Economists are crummy at predicting those, so I'm not even going to try. But we will have slower growth. And that slower growth, over time, will have a big negative effect on our living standards.
What can we, the people, do?
Obviously, to the extent that the American people are yelling and screaming at the politicians, whether it's at Tea Party protests or town hall meetings, that gets the politicians scared because these guys in Washington don't want to lose the best, most lucrative, easiest job they've ever had. So they'll do everything they can to get reelected, even if it means they sometimes vote for freedom, even though they don't want to. But even more than winning one battle on one tax cut vote, we need to focus on the big picture. The big picture is that government has gotten enormously bigger over the last 10 years, part Bush's fault, part Obama's fault. They were the Bobbsey twins of big government. If we continue on the path to big government, sooner or later, we're going to have very high tax rates, a very punitive tax system. We're going to have an IRS with even more power and more authority to ruin our lives. In other words, in the long run, yes, in the short run, let's fight to make sure that the tax cuts are extended so the economy is not hit with a big tax hike. But in the long run, we need to figure out how we preserve American exceptionalism, how we can protect America from becoming Greece or France or some other stagnant welfare state. And that means we have to not only convince the politicians, but convince our fellow Americans that it's not a good idea to mooch off the government. We need to earn money honestly by producing things of value in the private sector. We need to shrink the size of the public sector, get rid of some of these bureaucrats with their bloated salaries, and restore freedom in America.
What do you think they should do?
In the long run, our number one goal should be small government. And then if we can somehow get a small government, we have to figure out how to pay for it. In other words, what's the ideal tax system? Well, it would be great to go back to the kind of government our founding fathers wanted because it was so small we didn't need any broad-based tax whatsoever. But let's assume we're not going to quite get back there. What type of tax system should we have? Some people say national sales tax. Some people say a flat tax. Those are actually different sides of the same coin. A national sales tax taxes your income one time at one low rate when you spend it. A flat tax taxes your income one time at one low rate when you earn it. Both are completely different from our destructive, punitive, and discriminatory Internal Revenue Code, which has high tax rates, punitive double taxation, and corrupt loopholes. So I'm happy to have a flat tax. We've certainly seen about 25 countries around the world adopt flat taxes, and they're working great. I'm also happy to have a national sales tax, like a fair tax, but the one thing we need to do if we go down that path, Because we can't trust the politicians, we would need to amend the Constitution first to make sure they didn't pull a bait and switch and stick us with both an income tax and a sales tax. That's what they did in Europe. They call their sales tax over there a value-added tax, and it's one of the reasons why they have such a big bloated welfare state.
What about the value-added tax that they keep throwing around, probably after the election?
Well, a value-added tax is a form of national sales tax, and they have these things in Europe, and it's one of the reasons why they have such a bloated welfare state in Europe. We need to fight a value-added tax till our dying breath, because if we give the politicians a new source of revenue, they're going to spend every penny and then more, and we'll definitely wind up being Greece. And here's especially why we have to worry. Obama has a so-called deficit reduction, which a lot of people correctly view as just a stalking horse to push for higher taxes. There are rumors that that deficit reduction commission is going to propose a value-added tax, and that is Armageddon, World War III, whatever metaphor you want to use. If we want to protect America, if we want to protect American exceptionalism, we have to stop the VAT, because it would be the death knell to the notion of limited government and individual freedom.
Dan Mitchell, thanks again for being on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
one 800 449 8255. Now let us go to michaelsavage.com and see all of the great stories that I have not yet gotten to on the show that you may get around to. The coffee is good today. You know that? Doug, it is really good. After a night of feeling immortal, there's nothing like a day of drinking coffee and Alka-Seltzer. I'm still waiting for my site to download.
Your site needs some ad-lib. Coffee.
I have to ad-lib. Obama promotes bill to strengthen economy and save jobs. Duh. Is that why he's turning gray? Because he knows that no one believes him anymore? Maxine Waters, I will not be sacrificial lamb. Here you go. Up on michaelsavage.com, top story. State Department sends mosque imam to Mideastern outreach program. Imam Raouf, who blamed the U.S. for the 9/11 attacks and won't recognize Hamas as a terrorist group, is being sent at taxpayer expense to the Middle East to raise money for the Ground Zero Mosque. And you say that Obama's not a Muslim? What is he then? On the right side, stealth bomber expert guilty of selling secrets to China. A former B-2 bomber engineer who marketed and sold his stealth expertise to China is facing life in prison following his conviction. Why not execution? Why not execution? What's with life in prison? And remember the same-sex marriage judge, the whack job who looked like Colonel Sanders' illegitimate brother? The same-sex marriage whack job San Francisco judge says that a child has neither a right nor a need for a mother. Children do not need to be raised by a male parent and a female parent to be well-adjusted, said the crazy man in a black robe.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. What do you need a parent for when you have a turkey baster? Here in California, Northern California, we've had one of the coolest summers on record. And, you know, the old Mark Twain quip, I've never spent a colder winter than a summer in San Francisco, is still true. I love it. That's why I moved here originally, the fog. I used to come out from here in the summers. I would love nothing better than putting on an overcoat, a scarf, a hat, and marching around downtown and seeing the shivering Swedes in shorts who thought they were going to Mexico. Looking in guidebooks, like they thought they took the wrong plane. When I was off, I went around down to Union Square. I loved it, the coat, the scarf, the hat. I'm dressed for the summer here. I love it, cold. And there they were, the French, the shivering French, the shivering Germans, the shivering Swedes. So I saw three young guys. They looked Germanic. Nice-looking boys, like 16, like almost like models from a magazine. Good-looking kids, like 16. I saw they were staring at a map, lost. They were staring at on a map on California Street. So I'm like one of those guys who always tries to help people in the street. I'm from another universe. I hold doors for women. I went up to them and I said, can I help you? They looked like I was crazy because no one offered them any. I said, they said, yeah, sure, sure. So he said, where is Union Square? So I said, do you speak German? He said, no, Swedish. So I said, okay, take the map. Here's where you're standing. Turn it around. I had to show it to them geographically and point like I was in the woods because I'm a boater. I had to do like a compass reading. I said, you're here. This is California Street. Now forget the map. I said, just head in that direction. You know, go up two blocks, go over two blocks, go up two blocks, and go over three blocks, and you'll be there. You know, they understood that, what I need a map for. Nice kids. But as I walked to Union Square in my overcoat and scarf and wool hat, my ski hat, no less, and the wind is blowing and howling, I see the girls with their hands over their bosoms, shivering with their knees together, knocking in the street with the parents. And I observe tourists. I love to see people. I happen to like crowds because I don't live around crowds. I have an apartment in San Francisco, and I have a number of dwellings in the surrounding communities, and I move around quite a bit. Sometimes I like a quiet night out in the sticks. Sometimes I like to be in the city, whatever. And I sometimes have to revert to my New York origins and get lost in a crowd, and I like to be alone. I love to walk in a crowd and get lost. It's one of my favorite occupations. You say to me, what do you really like to do? I like to get lost in a crowd and look at people. So I go around and this and that, and I observe different tourists and different people. So you see, it's still stereotypically true. The Germans are stoic and, you know, very, very, they're stoic, not laughing. The French, I don't know, kind of snooty to themselves, even amongst themselves, with their sophistication in their own mind, sophistication based on what I don't know. And the Italians are happy and laughing. You see the 14-year-old girls with their parents. Nice kids, smiling, happy, laughing. And I reminded of what an Italian friend said to me. He said, Italians are happy Jews. I'll never forget that one. That was a great line. I loved it. I thought that was the funniest thing I ever heard. He said, Mike, he said, Italians and Jews are similar. He said, but Italians are happy Jews. I thought that was the funniest thing because a lot of Italians look like Jews and Jews look like Italians. I thought that was funny. Then I have another Italian friend who says to me, Christian, Jewish, he says, how do you put it? He says, different a division, same a corporation. I love that one. I thought that was good. Now, that's what you call interreligious communication. That's what happens when people live together and they don't throw bombs in the other one's house. You know what I'm saying? The Christians live next to the Jews now, 100 years in this country or more, and they don't put bombs in the other person's house of worship. Somehow they don't put a bomb in the gas tanks at JFK in the name of their religion. Somehow they've learned to get along. Despite the centuries of enmity. That's the beauty of America. Let's go to the people of the Savage Nation and take your calls. Ann in Portland, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I'm wondering what your response is to the thought of eternity frightens me. And
well, I understand it frightens everybody, but look, I'm going to give you a comedic answer because it may actually help you and millions of others. You ready for this?
Okay.
When I was a little boy, I would ask my mother, God rest her soul, about death. You know, children ask those questions, and she would smile and chuckle and say, she says, I don't know what it is. She says, all I know is no one's ever come back to complain.
Okay.
And you know what? It's simple, but it worked for me. It still does. What are you going to do about what's eternal? The eternal question of the abyss, right, is what you're asking?
It's not the so much where, it's that. When I phoned up, you had triggered a thought that I try to shut down whenever it comes up. When I die, it's hard for me to envision not ever thinking again. You know, the body dies, but because I think, it's hard to think.
Yeah,
that someday,
I think therefore I am. So what you're saying is if I cease thinking, I am no longer, right?
And if I go to the other alternative, okay, no matter where I spend it, somewhere it goes on forever and ever and ever. If I think on that, I don't want to be infinity.
But isn't it wonderful to realize that this is a miracle, that you're alive, that I'm alive, that the people listening to the show are alive? Isn't it a wonder to pause and think about what a miracle it really is, what life really is, and what a miraculous event life is?
Yeah.
It's a miracle. So therefore, if life is a miracle, and if you believe in a grand creator who created it all, so therefore death is part of this grand enterprise called life, is it not?
Yeah.
And it's set up so that we don't know what it is. And there's a reason that mere mortals don't know what it is. So, because the grand creator doesn't want mere mortals to know what the next world is. He only wants to hint at it. He doesn't want us to know what eternity is. And so, therefore, it's the way it's set up. It's to keep us humble. It's to keep us as humans. Otherwise, we become totally megalomaniacal, thinking that we're gods. We're not gods. We're only men. It's just something we can't know. We almost have to suspend any desire to know. See, that's the point. You say, I can't resolve that. Do you remember IQ tests when you were young and your teacher told you if you hit a question you can't answer, don't get hung up on it, keep going? You remember that? This is one of those questions, Ann. You can't answer it, skip it, and go on to the next question on the intelligence test called living. That's all. Move on. You're never going to resolve it. It's broken. People have broken their minds over this from the beginning of time. You look into the dog you love or the cat you love. You realize it's going to die one day. What are you going to do? What can you can't stop it? Same with you or a child. I mean, it's a horrible thought. I told you before, when I was a little boy in Queens, New York, there was a doctor's wife who went crazy with this question. She was a mad woman. It was sad, and we knew she was crazy. She would stop even the kids. She'd stop the mailman, everybody, and look at them and hold on to their clothing. You had to, like, pull her hands off you. And she'd be crying, saying, why did God make us that we have to die? Why did God make us that we're born to die? And kids didn't know what to do with her. The poor doctor didn't know what to do with her, but he didn't ridicule her. He stayed married to her the rest of their lives. Not like today, they throw out a wife like a used handkerchief because she said something wrong. It was the way it is. Some people crack up from the whole question. Others become talk show hosts. You see, there's many different ways to resolve this. You can paint, you can sculpt, you can run, you can bicycle, you can become a degenerate sex maniac, you can become a drug addict. I mean, these are all manifestations of people who cannot answer that question. Don't you understand that? These are people trying to answer the question in their own way, and that's called the human condition. That's the great tapestry that keeps God entertained. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Get too emotional about it, but this is a very symbiotic business. After a certain number of years, when you have an audience and they like you, you like them, it's very much like going into a cafe with them. I used to have a shtick on my show years ago. I had a local show when I started calling Cafe Savage. Someone will rip it off tomorrow, but they can't do it, so I don't care. You can imitate someone, but you can't duplicate it, so it doesn't matter what they steal. Everyone tries the New York voice. No, they all try to act like they're a truck driver. They wonder why people don't take them seriously. You can't fake it. I'm a man of the people and a man of the streets with a high education, with a great deal of experience, so they don't need the New York street thing in order, you know. But if you go on the, hey, Uncle Jay, how you doing? You know how many guys send tapes in like that to my syndicator? They think that's going to get them on the radio. Hey, how you doing, Mickey? Blah, 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 blah. That's not what radio's about. That's not it. That's only the thing. It's not the whole thing. And nothing, you know, that's not there. So anyhow, here we are, beautiful world. So the sky is still technicolor. The fog is still thick in San Francisco. The German tourists are still shivering in the streets of the city. I am still here with Teddy, about to continue the show, after which I'll be walking in the streets of San Francisco with my hat pulled down and my collar pulled up. Why would you want to live anywhere else? Why do I care about the liberal nuts here? They don't bother me. As far as I'm concerned, they're just fodder. The Wall Street Journal wrote an article about me last, a terrible piece of junk. The writer, you know, should be embarrassed. The kid had no capacity as a journalist, nothing. That's what they hired today. I mean, I've had good interviews. The New Yorker was superb. The Playboy article, although it was attempted to be a hit piece, was well written. The guy went after me at every turn. He tried to trap me and couldn't. He fired every bullet in his arsenal, every arrow in his quiver. He tried, and none of them hit me. But it was good. It was a good interview because I enjoyed the challenge. It had depth. This thing from the Wall Street Journal was a joke. You know, the guy, to show you what a poor journalist he was, he writes, oh, he writes in all caps. His emails, he writes in all caps. What's that, an attempt to say I'm illiterate because I use all caps? Yes, I use all caps in my emails. You know why? Because to me, an email to this day is still a telegram. Okay? I know how to write books, schmuck. I'm the author of 25 books. I'm not a journalist for the Wall Street Journal, who got the job because they had to, you know, fill certain quotas. to be very honest with you. What a stupid article the guy writes. But in the article, he says, he asks me a question, which thank God he got this right. And he says, I asked Savage why he lives in such a liberal area, such as San Francisco. How come he lives here? So I said to him, they asked the same thing of Voltaire, why he lived in Paris if he found the foibles of the Parisians so bothersome. Why did he stay in Paris? And he said, because that's what I write about. In other words, I write about the foibles of the Parisians. So I said, that's the reason I stay in San Francisco. What could be better? Where do you want me to live? Where normal people are? What would I have to write about if I lived around normal Americans who love God and country and family? I have nothing to write about. You get it? That's why I live around here. I love this wacko area. So the air, you know, I haven't been banned from San Francisco yet. I mean, I'm still allowed here with the wonderful dental care and the food. There is good food here. I got to tell you something. It is a food city. You got to know where to go, though. You got to stay out of the downtown. Big, oh, the dog's already here stretching. Is it my body motion? Do I give off a certain chemical? He already got up from under the desk. He's giving the four-legged stretch. Looking at me already, he thinks he's going to get the bone for the job he did already, guarding my feet from the imaginary attack. Teddy, you did such a good job. Why do people like to hear about Teddy in the studio? I don't understand it. My dog is like one enzyme away from being a man, a human. There's certain dogs that are so smart, you could almost see them reaching to become like Pinocchio, become a person. It's almost painful to watch. They look at you like they understand every word. Well, I know that he has a larger vocabulary than the average rap star. That I know. I know the dog understands at least 250 words of English. That I can guarantee you. While most of the rap artists use about 30 to 40 words. I don't care if they make $30 million. It doesn't matter to me. It means nothing to me what how much money they make. Their vocabulary is about 50 words. F-word, B-word, F-word, B-word. Varieties of the F-word, varieties of the B-word. Varieties of the B and the F word together, varieties of the F and B word together, and they make $30 million a year. Good luck to them. Good luck to them. My dog understands about 250 words of English. Many other stories. You all heard about the JetBlue flight attendant who hurled obscenities at passengers over the airline's PA system, then deployed the inflatable emergency chute, slid down, and fled. They're calling him the freaking flyer. Oh, come fly with me, come fly, let's fly away. It's a good thing he didn't open the chute in the air, though. You got to say that, you know, he was not that crazy, right? What was that all about, Doug? Have you read the story? We have the YouTube on michaelsavage.com.
Apparently, he's been a flight attendant for years, and something just set him off. He got hit in the head with a bag or something like that.
Oh, what was in the bag? Medical marijuana?
Something... It was something about a passenger just wasn't listening to his instructions, and he got upset.
He got into an argument with a passenger, told a 39-year-old airline employee to F off after Slater asked him to not remove his luggage from the overhead compartment until the plane had fully stopped. The passenger wound up opening his overhead compartment anyway, striking the seething Slater steward on the head. After the plane, which arrived from Pittsburgh, pulled up to Gate 3 at the JetBlue terminal, passengers began moving to the door. Suddenly, Slater, who told authorities he is HIV positive, you get the picture, commandeered the public address system and launched into a tirade. Here's what he said. Slater bellowed incoherently, according to law enforcement sources, but that wasn't the end of it. In a move fitting for an action flick, Slater then grabbed his two bags and a can of beer from the galley, and popped the lever for the airline's inflatable chute before sliding to the tarmac outside the terminal door. That's amazing.
I always wanted
That's
to try
amazing.
That.
Haven't you wanted to do that, Doug, to get off as fast as you could?
Exactly. That always looked fun to me.
The plane's first officer told investigators that he tried to block the enraged flight attendant from getting to the emergency chute. Slater said, "Did you really grab the luggage before fleeing?" He responded coolly, "Oh, yes. I threw the bags onto the chute, and I slid down after them." Once on the tarmac, Slater boarded the air train to pick up his silver Jeep Wrangler and raced home to Bell Harbor, where he hopped into bed with his boyfriend, a source said. Cops nabbed him at home. He was charged with criminal mischief and reckless endangerment. Can you believe this? It's unbelievable to me. This is unbelievable to me. He said he beat alcoholism and substance abuse to get back in the air. Well, do you think he'll be given special privileges because he is, let us put it this way, living with a boyfriend, Doug?
Of course.
You know?
He'll probably get some sort of settlement.
I think he shows all of the skills necessary to go to work for Obama. He has a good resume. You want to hear his good resume? Good under pressure, able to deliver peanuts and pretzels. He's got a good skill at pouring soda into styrofoam cups. He has no education, no training, no computer skills, no manual labor skills, no interpersonal skills, no professional degrees, no knowledge on how to start or run a business.
He can run the Air Force.
I think he can be in charge of the FAA. Well, that's it from MichaelSavage.com. Don't say I didn't warn you. Savage.